You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 421 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I am Stephen Seagraves, joined this week by Mr. Fosma Moon.
Good afternoon.
How you doing, Fos?
Yeah. Not too bad. And yourself?
I'm doing all right. You're in London.
I am.
Yeah. And Seth is somewhere east of you in Vienna or... who knows?
Yeah, and I botched my return trip back.
Oh, you did?
Well, I have a ticket coming out of Amsterdam at like 2:30 on, which starts tomorrow on Sunday, which is fine. Unfortunately, there's no flights going to Amsterdam tomorrow until much later in the day, except for an EasyJet flight at 8 a.m.
That sounds like you're taking EasyJet.
Oh, well, yes, in theory, but it requires me to, it's out of Stansted, it requires me to leave the hotel at 5 a.m.
Oh, God.
So now I'm like, maybe I just need to change this entire ticket and do something different.
Can you take the train?
I could, but it would take, because of the hour, it would be just as long as the bus, because the bus leaves outside my hotel.
Oh, I got you. Okay. So, could you take the train to Amsterdam, I guess? Like, don't you have, like, you could just do, like, the tunnel up to...
That's not exactly, yes. Very rather cost prohibitive, requires a lot more. The end time will be about the same, believe it
or not. Oh, I got you. Okay. So what are you going to do?
I think I'm going to end up buying a new ticket to go home and changing that one.
Gotcha. Okay. Got to pay more attention to this stuff.
Well, it was very... there must be a bank holiday, because I'm surprised that there's no earlier flights to Amsterdam at all.
Yeah. It could be.
That's not normal.
Yeah, it's weird. I was going to say, I mean, just following up, like, from our show last week, I am surprised no one made a 420 joke since it was episode 420.
Clearly, you see where our focus is in life.
Yes, yes. We went the entire episode and didn't even reference it once. Anyway, topic-wise, United. So they had a flight out of, it was Maui, I believe?
Maui to San Francisco.
Yeah, Maui to San Francisco. It lost quite a bit of altitude after takeoff, so it was climbing normally. Down to about 800 feet, it lost altitude down to about 800 feet, and then continued on normally. And now it's just finally picking up traction after someone reported on it. I don't know. It's weird. The whole thing's weird.
It is. I mean, it comes out 8 weeks after the fact that it happened.
Yeah.
The data was in flight radar, so I'm surprised something did not pick this up more automatically.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what, the third such incident in the last few months, right?
We had the Qatar incident, and was there another one?
I thought there was another one, but maybe I'm confusing it with the turbulent.
I mean, so to be fair, there was a lot of turbulence and a lot of fog coming out of Maui on that day. So it could be a very similar instance as to what happened to the Qatar flight, where situational awareness was lost and, you know, the plane was put into a dive. It's very odd. Like, there's some reporting on there's been some reports where a person on the plane, passenger, said something finally and said, oh yeah, we could tell people were screaming. It's weird that that only comes out after this has been reported. It's not conspiracy to me. Like, I don't think United paid hush money to all the passengers to not post anything on social media. But it's strange.
Yeah, I just don't understand it, right? Normally these things get out in the public eye so quickly. This one's strange that this incident happened and no one knew. Or no one really talked about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very weird. So, I mean, I think United's launched an internal investigation, and last I read, the NTSB is now investigating it.
Yeah, apparently they reported it when they landed in San Francisco, so at least the airline did the right thing in that regards.
Yeah.
But, the other incident I was thinking was the FedEx Southwest incident.
Oh, yeah.
And while that wasn't a loss of altitude, it's, again, like, there's a lot of near misses happening.
Yeah. I mean, it's so bad now that didn't the NTSB issue a, you know, safety... a reminder to everybody, like, be aware. I think I saw that go on.
What's that going to do, though?
Oh, I don't know. It's like, you know, a memo to remember things.
Yeah.
A memo to read the memo. Yeah. I'm interested to see where the investigation goes on this one. The thing that I'm a little surprised by, like, if you, like, do the math on how much altitude was lost and how quickly, it pulled probably, like, 2.7 to 2.8 Gs on the 777, which I actually think is, like, outside the operating window of the plane. So I thought it would have had to sit on the ground for a while at Chicago to get like a full, or at San Francisco to get a full checkup before going on its next flight. And I mean, it looks like it took off 2 hours later. So maybe that was enough time, but that's weird.
Yeah, I just that's the thing, right? The plane just the plane just kept going.
Yeah,
yeah. And so it would that tells me is it wasn't necessarily an incident with the plane,
mm-hmm.
right? But it must have been something else, whether it's a pilot issue or environmental.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of environmental, JFK T1 Terminal 1 had a fire and a subsequent loss of power. And I believe this was on Thursday. Is that right? This past Thursday?
Yeah, I believe this was Thursday.
And basically knocked out power to the entire terminal. All the flights had to be canceled for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, a few flights diverted, but most of the flights got canceled. And I mean, it's a brutal day for a lefty, right? Because I think on Tuesday or Wednesday, they had an IT out. Someone cut a piece of fiber near Frankfurt, yep. Took all their IT systems out. Then lefty at JFK, you know, and I think Swiss is now in T1 too.
Yep,
they right, and Austrian. They canceled everything in and out of there. I think the early Frankfurt JFK flight ended up diverting to Boston, but everything else in the Zurich flight, I think, went to Newark, but that's about it.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll talk about the Air New Zealand flight and the bonus topics for our Patreon subscribers. We'll talk about that one because that's a whole different can of worms. But the fire, it's interesting to me. I mean, they're doing construction at T1, right? Like, they're getting ready to knock T1 down. That's the plan. Yep. And so just from what I could gather, it sounds like someone actually severed a cable and potentially fried a very large, transformer, and that there's a new transformer now en route to T1, to replace the old one, from Georgia. So it had to be shipped in. These are very specialized pieces of equipment. So it's interesting. Watch where you're digging. Call 311 maybe first.
I mean, I'm just surprised that an area as dense as the Northeast, the closest transformer is in Georgia.
It's not surprising. I mean, this is probably a multi-million-dollar transformer, and there's a very large manufacturer of these in Georgia.
But you think that they'd have one around, given how dense that area is?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would have to look. I would probably have to go figure out which transformer they actually ordered. But this is probably a pad-mounted one that sits somewhere in the airport property, or it could be buried. I don't know. But it's interesting because it's probably a distribution transformer. So it's one that like down transforms into, a high enough voltage that you can use it for high voltage stuff, but also can be fed to other transformers for like what you would see at a house. Mm-hmm. Which is, it's kind of like a little mini substation. So I don't know. I'd have to go look and see what was ordered. You'd be surprised. I mean, after Sandy, there were hundreds of these on order and they were like back ordered for like years.
Sandy, I get, right? Because you had such a large systematic failure, but this is one.
Yeah.
Like, you would think that you'd have a spare someone in the within a 500-mile range?
Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised maybe Virginia is actually where another round of these are manufactured. I'm surprised they didn't have one, but it may be that they've moved production all to Georgia for this particular model. There's not a lot of makers of these. I mean, I was just in San Diego at a conference for distributed energy resources, and there was only like four manufacturers, and most of them are in Europe. And so, I guess they got lucky; they found one in the United States. So let's talk a little bit more about Lufthansa, right? Because they not only had the IT outage on Wednesday, Thursday, but they also had a strike on Friday, the 17th of February, and it essentially canceled their entire schedule for Friday.
Yeah, they canceled everything in and out of Munich and Frankfurt. I don't know what they did for for other routes.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like things even to Stuttgart, Hamburg, Hanover, and Bremen were also impacted. But it looks like maybe Berlin and, you know, in the northwest, Dusseldorf. Yeah, they kept their flights, but they don't have anything. I don't think Dusseldorf still has an international flight, so. Maybe to like Mallorca or something.
Maybe. I mean, and this wasn't a Lufthansa specific strike. Like, this was all the ground handlers across all of Germany. So,
yeah, not good. 1,300 flights total, and then I think they restarted them today on Saturday because the union negotiations have restarted. It's just not been a good week for Lufthansa.
No, we'll see what next week brings for these guys, but. I'm curious as to how they're recovering the operation after, you know, three back to back days of outages has got to be painful.
Absolutely, yeah. United, Alaska has lost their lawsuit with Virgin Group, or Virgin America, I guess. Is it Virgin Group? I think it's Virgin
Group. It's Virgin Group because it was licensing the name for Virgin.
Yeah, and so in 2018, Virgin Group and Virgin America had a licensing agreement that was set back in 2014, and Virgin America had to pay a minimum of $8 million in royalties every year to the Virgin Group through 2039 for using the Virgin brand. And then Alaska stopped using the Virgin brand, and they thought, oh, we don't have to pay the royalties anymore. That has now led to a lawsuit. I think the lawsuit was in 2019, and it's finally been settled by a London judge, and he ruled in favor of Virgin Group.
So Alaska says they're going to appeal it.
Yeah, so this just keeps going. I think the settlement was like $160 million, 20 years worth of royalties at a minimum of $8 million annually.
Yep.
So, and he said it's a flat fee payable for the right to use the Virgin brand, whether or not that right is taken up. And it must be the agreement must be approached from the perspective of Virgin and Virgin America and not the perspective of Alaska. I think this just kind of comes back to like some of our thoughts around Alaska buying Virgin and it being more of a cluster than anyone really realized. And I think too much, they bit off more than they could chew.
But I mean, let's take a step back, right? If JetBlue had acquired Virgin, do we think it would be any different?
I think maybe JetBlue would have just said, we'll pay you a flat fee or like renegotiated the terms. They just wouldn't.
For the name, sure. Yeah. But for the operation, I mean, JetBlue's had so many issues over the last few years on its own.
Yeah.
That I don't know if it would have been any better. At least, you know, the advantage Alaska had is at least has familiarity with the West Coast.
Yeah, but didn't blend the brands well together. Didn't kind of made a half-hearted effort at getting them merged, it felt like.
What two brands have ever merged and blended together well?
Yeah, true. Fair enough. But it felt like they just never really made an attempt even. Like they just kind of said, okay, look, we painted these two planes in purple and red, and now we're Alaska. We're going to run these routes. It was odd. And I still feel like Alaska's West Coast strategy is a bit of a mess. I feel like they can't make a decision as to what they want to do. And whereas Virgin was very focused, Virgin said, look, we're going to take routes out of LA and San Francisco, and we're going to focus on particular places that we want to fly, particularly out of San Francisco.
But yes and no, they tried so much stuff and they failed at so much stuff too.
True. True, they weren't great at it, but they were very focused.
Yeah, but they were focused, but when you look at it, the only thing they were really focused on was JFK to San Francisco, JFK to LA, JFK to Vegas.
Yeah.
Right, those were the only consistent things, right? And they did San Francisco, San Diego for a while, then they dropped it. They did San Francisco and LA. That's fine. But, like, they tried a lot of other stuff and nothing really stuck.
Yeah. I mean, they did operate to Dallas fairly effectively into Love Field. Yeah, I'll give them that.
In their later years, absolutely.
Yeah.
And Alaska picked that up for a while.
And then dumped it.
They were doing well with it. The problem is they just couldn't compete with Southwest.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And I don't think Virgin would have been much more successful as Southwest just kept dumping with the new terminal opening at Love. It gave Southwest a lot more capacity.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they were only running two gates, I think.
Right. So,
I don't know. I feel like, but I still feel like Alaska's strategy on the West Coast is just they don't really know where they want to be. Like, do they want to be the West Coast carrier? Do they want to be the Transcon carrier? Do they want to be focused on a few cities? Like, growth is always important for a company because you've got to show that to your shareholders and you've got to keep innovating. But I feel like they've just kind of lost some of their core ability to make good decisions. Like, I know they need to be present in the Transcon market, but they suck at it. Like, they're not going to compete with Delta, United, and American on San Francisco.
But I don't think they're trying to compete with them on that. Right, I think they've accepted that they have a lesser product, but their price point is also a lot less too.
In some cases, I think they're charging exorbitant amounts for JFK LAX and JFK San Francisco. Like you're talking $1,800 to $2,200 for first. I can fly a flat seat for a little bit more.
Correct, but you can generally also if you plan, you can find those seats for $600.
Yeah,
you will not find a flat seat for $600.
Yeah, they're not competing on like they're trying to capture those cheap customers that plan for sure. Because they're definitely not competing on like load factor. Like they're not putting four flights on the schedule, JFK to San Francisco, and making them all $599.
Yeah, but you got to turn around. They're really focusing on customers in their hubs traveling to the east. not the other way around.
Yeah, that's right? A good point.
So if you're in Seattle or you're in Portland or you're in San Francisco and you prefer Alaska over United, right? You're even if it's the same price, you're generally going to lean towards the Alaska product because that's your airline.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, they still have the two flights, Portland to JFK and Portland to Newark. I'm actually amazed that they've kept those around. I thought they would cut JFK, but now that they have the club there, I feel like they're just like, yeah, we've got to fly there.
They have like two JFK San Diego flights.
Yeah, which I'm fine with. I mean, JFK from the city, I think it's kind of a toss up, which whether Newark or JFK is better at this point to get into Manhattan. If you're going to lower Manhattan, I think Newark wins. But if you're going anywhere north of Soho, JFK is probably the easiest.
No, on the west side, Newark is still easier.
Okay.
On the east side, JFK is easier.
Yeah. So I don't know. I've felt like Portland's kind of got the shaft a little bit from Alaska. Delta's definitely trying to make a move here, lower like very cheap fares to Europe and East Coast out of Portland, kind of doing the same thing in Seattle. It's just hard to see what Alaska's strategy actually is because you can't reach everywhere requires either a connection in Seattle or maybe San Francisco if you're lucky.
Yeah, I don't really see many options for connections in San Francisco these days.
Yeah. So I don't really know what the plan is. Maybe they're just focused on Hawaii and East Coast.
I mean, they're definitely not focused on East, right? They're predominantly, let's be real, they're focused on Seattle.
Yeah.
Right. That is their core focus.
But they're not even doing that well. They're not doing that well. Like, that's my problem with it.
Well, okay, why do you think they're not doing Seattle well?
The airport's a mess.
That's not them.
They aren't competitive with Delta's pricing out of Seattle.
But I don't think they need to be competitive with Delta's pricing out of Seattle.
But, I mean, Delta's growing. I would be very worried about Delta if I was Alaska.
I wouldn't. I can also foresee in the next 10 years Delta exiting Seattle as a hub.
Yeah, I mean, we've had mixed discussions. I think Delta struggled because they've tried to find what do people actually want to fly out of Seattle and what kind of connections can we offer. And I think at first, I've said it on the show, I think at first Delta really, really, really didn't know what to do. And I think they're tweaking it. I think they're finally figuring out what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah, but all you need is another downturn.
Yes.
And Seattle will be at the top of the list to get chopped.
Yeah, that's fair enough. It's fair enough. I mean, why have Detroit and Minneapolis?
Because they have such a large local customer base there, mm-hmm. right? There are so many Fortune 500s based in the Minneapolis metro area. There's all the car manufacturers based in, and their suppliers based in Detroit.
Yeah.
Right? Like, why did Northwest, like, those are two fortress hubs forever. Why? It's mm-hmm. because there's so much local O&D traffic that they will always be able to drive a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when I look at the one thing I will say about Delta at Seattle is when I look at their route map and their schedule, they pretty much have said, give us what is Alaska flying today? We'll fly the exact same thing 5 minutes later. And then they've added on to that. So Seattle, Cancun.
That's not a sustainable strategy.
No, maybe not. I mean, but they're doing it on price, right? Like, I think it's the Seth's famous line. We'll just make it up in volume. I don't know. Maybe they're just trying to drive Alaska out. I don't know that that's a winning strategy. I don't think you're going to drive Alaska out of Seattle, but I do think you can make Alaska rethink some of their plans. I mean, Alaska's now running just like E-175s out of Portland to pretty much everywhere besides the Transcon.
But is that because they don't have enough big planes?
Could be. It could also be the markets are really light. I mean, the LAX schedule has been now they don't have kind of some of the middle of the day stuff anymore to LAX they used to have. It's interesting. It's just interesting to watch.
So maybe United was onto something when they dropped LAPDX.
Oh, sure. Oh, let's move along. So JetBlue is trying to extort, slots out of KLM.
Yeah. This is
what is this?
They tried to get slots in Amsterdam because they wanted to fly into Amsterdam. And then they got denied, I think, two or three different times. Mm-hmm. And then now they went whining to the DOT going, we need slots at Amsterdam. You should make KLM give them up because of their joint venture with Delta.
So they filed a formal complaint with yep. the government of Netherlands and the DOT.
At least the DOT. I don't know what they've done with the Netherlands. But yeah, I know they filed a complaint with the DOT asking them to demand slots for them.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. So they filed against the government of the Netherlands with the DOT, and they want the DOT to negotiate on its behalf. I'm reading Seth's article on this, actually. So,
yeah, and I'm just scratching my head. Like, this is the spoiled kid in the corner going, I didn't get my toy, so someone else, I need to steal it from someone.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's weird.
I mean, I'm all for airlines growing and more airlines, but the reality is, like, you got to play the game, right?
Yeah.
And this is, if you want slots to set Amsterdam, particularly since the Dutch government is reducing the number of flights in and out, so the slot number of slots is decreasing, the existing ones become more valuable, you got to pay up. This is how everybody else does it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the point is, so the DOT, JetBlue noted in their complaint that KLM is party to the Blue Skies Transatlantic Joint Venture, which is Delta, Air France, Virgin Atlantic, and KLM. They control more than 60% of the slots at Schiphol and 85% of the U.S. Netherlands nonstop market. It's a barrier of entry. They called the Blue Sky Alliance, basically. So, I mean, it's some interesting points. Do they get their way? I don't know. I don't know that they win this one.
I don't think they will.
Yeah.
If you want slots, go buy them.
Yeah. I mean, the one was the vacated slots from Aeroflot. I could see that one potentially going to them, but it's still hard to justify just giving the slot up, right?
Well, the other problem is, you know, you're fighting against the Dutch government who's saying they're actively going to reduce the number of takeoff and landing operations.
Yeah.
So as slots free up, they are just going to disappear. They're not going to be available for use.
Yeah.
So if you want slots, you got to go buy some active ones.
Yep. Yep. Agreed. I think last up is Scoot, which is the Singaporean low-cost carrier. So it's a subsidiary of Singapore Airlines, is buying E190 E2s. They ordered 9 of them, and they should be delivered by 2024. One of them will be delivered by 2024, and the rest will come in 2025. I found this kind of odd. I mean, I know that it has quite the range, right? I think it can fly like almost 2,900 nautical miles. But it's an odd choice because Scoot operates a bunch of 787s and A320s. Do you think these like just outright replace the A320s, or do you think they're growing?
I think they're growing.
Yeah.
I mean, with where aviation is going, with more and more low-cost carriers, right, I see the legacy carriers somewhat stagnating in growth.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and I don't really, unless they want to start competing on price like less carriers.
Yeah.
So I don't really see Singapore going into a price war with the AirAsias of the world.
Yeah, yeah.
And the way for them to do it is through Scoot.
And they can fly, I guess, it's a smaller jet, so they could fly to maybe harder to get to destinations or destinations that don't take larger jets. So they could technically fly to like Koh Samui, I think is one example. And so like you haven't been able to fly Singapore to Koh Samui with Singapore or Scoot until now or when this plane is delivered. So it's an interesting thing. And it does allow some growth into those places where maybe you need a little bit of range and a nice plane to do that with that's still a regional jet. I mean, that's good. I mean, good for them. I'll be interested to see how it's configured. Is it going to be super tight like their 787s are? I won't love that.
But could you imagine delivery flights for these planes?
Ooh, I would be on. I'd take a ride on one of these for a delivery flight.
You realize it would be another island hopper, right?
I'd be okay with that.
Okay,
I'd do it. I'd do it for the show. One thing I want to talk about real quick is that the Embraer names of their planes. So this is called an Embraer E190 E2. Couldn't they just come up with a better name? Like, isn't that a terrible... Like, couldn't you just call it the E2?
I mean, plane names really make sense.
Yeah, I mean, the 737 MAX. Now, I mean, we've gotten... I guess some of it makes sense, like, when you talk about the A320 and the A321s, because it's, like, variants of those planes. And this is technically a variant of the E190, but to me, it's a brand new plane when you, like, look at it.
But is the type certification different or not?
I don't know.
That might be what drives it.
Yeah. See, where's Seth when you need him? Ah, he's in Austria. Yeah.
Something fun doing something.
Yeah. I mean, it technically is an E190, so type certification, yeah, probably plays a part of this.
Yeah, so that's probably why you can't change the name of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Anything else you want to talk about? Or I mean, we can talk about the JFK Auckland disaster, and then you and I can talk about some other stuff in the bonus topic.
Sure. You know, so just... The thing that really made me start looking at it this week, so with Terminal 1 closing at JFK on Thursday for the fire, that's the terminal that Air New Zealand uses. They were 8 hours into a flight to JFK, and Air New Zealand operations people decided to turn the plane back to New Zealand. The pilots, you can see that someone caught the ACARS messages, but the pilots were actually asking, can we divert to Houston or LA? And then put passengers onwards. And they actually had a second crew on board as well, so they could go to Houston or LA, swap crews for while JFK, figure out where they could go at JFK. And the ops team just said, no, we are coming back. And that seemed like a total failure, because they flew the entire length of the flight, 16 hours, except they ended up right where they started.
Yeah.
Which I would be livid. But, you know, looking at this flight, when in the first few weeks of it operating, it had a lot of challenges with a couple of diversions. Looking at the last 40 flights, it's had 3 diversions and 3 cancellations.
Yeah. Operationally not great.
No, like, when does Air New Zealand just say this is not, this is not good for passengers?
And they were fairly, when they did the turnaround, they were fairly close to Hawaii, right?
Yes.
Like, that's frustrating, because you could have sent them to Hawaii, figured out what was going on, let them even clear immigration in Hawaii, and then...
Or go to LA, right? LA or Houston, right? They had enough fuel to go to both, and then the advantage to LA and Houston is you can push them onto other carriers.
Yeah, and you have operations people at both of those airports. Like, you have an Air New Zealand operation in Houston. So, yeah, very strange. I guess maybe they're just, like, a risk averse, and they're like, we don't want to figure out how to deal with this plane after, you know, it gets to Houston. I don't know. It's weird.
I mean, sure, but you can still, like, they still had 8 hours. They could figure out, an alternate terminal at JFK. You could either even go to Newark and bus the folks, you know, bus the folks from JFK over and let them show up to JFK to check in and bus them over to Newark for the departure.
Yep.
That would still be a lot less headache than what they did.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of strange, to put the flight in the air, have it shut. I mean, it was in the middle of the ocean when T1 shut down because of the fire. Understand that, but you're already halfway there. And you've got operations, because now you've canceled the return flight too, right? Like, it just seems like a real operational headache. So would you fly this route, or is it one of these ones where you're just kind of like, I don't even want to take the risk?
If I had the time, I would do it, just hoping for a diversion.
Yeah.
get an interesting line. But I almost feel like I should try to grab this sooner rather than later, because I don't think this is going to serve.
You just don't think it lasts?
No, you can't have a flagship route like this with such poor reliability.
Yeah. And isn't Qantas picking this route up as well?
Yes.
It'll be interesting to see how they do. Is it more reliable?
I would bet they would do better. The reason that I would say that is they are more closely aligned with AA.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Part of the problem with Air New Zealand is they changed their mind from going from Newark to going to JFK, where while there's a star presence, there's not a large star presence.
Yeah.
Right. At Newark, we had a partner in United that they could lean on in times like this to help them through, but they chose not to do that.
Yeah. Why do you think that is? Do you think that they just thought JFK has the cachet of New York?
That's kind of my suspicion, mm-hmm. right? Because JFK doesn't make sense. Their choice for JFK doesn't make sense. Right? The reason they were going to fly to Newark was because they were decommissioning their LA Heathrow flight.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to fly to Newark and then do Auckland, Newark, Heathrow, pushing people to United for Newark, Heathrow. Now they don't have a way. They don't have a way to get to Heathrow anymore.
Yep.
Right. They can connect people in LA, the other hubs. But the intent was always the whole reason they said they were going to fly to Newark was to push people to Heathrow and drop the LA Heathrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I wonder if it's a combination of cachet of JFK and or slot availability at Newark.
It could be. I mean, the slot availability, though, aren't the slots like loosely?
They are, but if it's peak time, it's either there, like, you know, depending, like, this flight leaves probably peak time,
mm-hmm.
right? So I don't think you have slots, right? Those are somewhat locked down.
Yep. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a rough thing for passengers for sure. I don't know what to do as far as operations. Like, what would you do as the operations manager of this flight? Like, if you're looking at the schedule, what do you do? Do you say, look, we've got to build more time into the block. We've got to come up with a better agreement. Maybe we need to talk to Newark again and see if that's going to work better for us. Because T1's not great anyway, right? Like, T1's not good.
And it's going to get worse.
Yeah.
While this construction goes on, right? It's only going to get worse. So, I mean, they have to make a decision on what they really want to do, right? I think they chose poorly by going to JFK. And, you know, in this case, I think they had plenty of options. They just chose not to use them.
Mm. Yeah.
And, you know, they could easily have dropped, like, they could have diverted that flight to LA, canceled one of the returns, and then used that plane to come back.
Yep. Yeah. Very true. Yep. Interesting stuff. Well, and to our Patreon subscribers, we're going to talk a little bit about Terminal A and Newark a little bit at Terminal A. And then we're going to talk about adjusting to time zones and maybe a couple other things if you are a Patreon subscriber. Stay tuned for that. If not, we do appreciate you listening. You can leave a comment at moredotsmorelines.com on Twitter at dotslines. We'll talk to you in the next one. We'd love to hear from you, so please let us know what you think. And we'll talk to you next one. Happy travels. Bye-bye.
Take care.